Hey, this is Whitney, just quickly jumping in with a disclaimer. As always, the opinions expressed by ourselves and our guests belong to us and us alone. They do not reflect any of the opinions of our current or previous institutions and places of employment. Thanks so much for listening, and on to the episode.
Welcome to Humans in Their Natural Habitat. That's Whitney.
That's Carly.
Yeah.
That's hey. Knox.
And the heavy breathing is Turtle. So we interviewed an entomologist, and it was really cool because insects are fascinating. However, we kind of got a little sideways in our conversation, so it didn't follow our normal guidelines.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, it is. So it was a very unique interview. It was very enlightening and fascinating and, dare I say, raunchy.
Oh, yeah, it went off the rails.
Yeah, here's the thing. I had just gone off of a 3-day, 10-hour work days, lots of vet stuff going on. I was really, really tired, and I had a hard time staying focused.
And it's starting to heat up where we live. All four of us, because our guest brought his wife, who is our friend, have been working outside. Mm-hmm. The temperatures are approaching 100 degrees. And we were tired and unfocused and scattered and having a good time.
Yeah. But I still think, you know, we learned some really interesting things about insects. And, you know, maybe we can have them on again and we can kind of focus on the how you became an entomologist, what you're doing now with entomology. And I think we just kind of had two bug talks, insect talks.
Yeah, I think that about sums it up. We started off with the best of intentions to talk about him and his career path, and we definitely started that way, but once he finished school, I don't know if we talked about his professional career at all.
Yeah, I really don't think we talked about his professional career.
Yeah. I mean, can you really call him a professional?
Not based on that interview.
No.
So, and we also, you know, should address the other elephant in the room, because we thought we fixed our sound quality and we created another issue, which is our lovely echo. So it sounds like we started recording in a cave.
I mean, your house is kind of cave-like. It has pretty high ceilings and lots of corners.
Lots of corners. So we're going to try to fix that too, because I know it can be annoying. We're really sorry. We're trying. The sound thing is just not our forte.
No, just we're not technologically savvy. We're doing the best we can. We appreciate you guys sticking with us through the sound issues. And like Carly mentioned, it feels like every time we fix one issue, a new one pops up.
Yeah. So hopefully we're not as echoey in our intro or our next podcast episode. We're working on it. We're trying. So thanks for that. Yeah, what a mess. We're zookeepers. I can barely, you know, function and work on a computer. I'm just really bad at it, as you know, Whitney.
I do. That's why I do the editing.
Yeah, she does the editing. And she also does the social media. So if you haven't, you know, checked out our Instagram. You should. What is it?
HITNH podcast.
Hit an H. Yeah.
Yeah, check it out. We post pictures of animals, us with animals, things relating to whatever we're going to be chatting about that week.
Yeah. Like us on Instagram. Do we have any other social media things?
I mean, we have a TikTok. I feel like I've been lacking in inspiration as of late because, like, I'm at work, I'm working, I'm not going out of my way to take videos for social media, so our TikToks are really just videos I already had on my phone, seeing how they can be used. So I feel like I started out strong, begun to lose steam, but maybe pick back up on that.
Yeah. Also, you know, rate, review the podcast, just so we know. Do you like it? Do you think we're terrible? If you do think we're terrible, we're still going to continue doing it, but just don't listen.
Yeah, actually, don't rate us if you think we're terrible. Only rate us if you like us.
Yeah, you know, that is better. Better for the self-esteem. What self-esteem?
Yeah.
Cool. So on to the interview. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I started. You're going to get a lot closer than that, though.
I'm waiting for you. Mm-hmm. Is it okay? Can we get started now? We've only been waiting for you for how long?
Tell me about the thing about Shiny Dr. Page again.
Tell me about how you're supposed to be here at 5:30. Are we ready? Is it on? Is it starting?
We're so close together.
Hi. Whitney and I are going to cuddle this whole episode on Huggies. She loves cuddling other women. She doesn't even like cuddling her husband.
No.
All right, so we have a very awesome guest today. He has a degree in entomology from the University of Nebraska. And he is a friend of, not a friend. He's not a friend.
No, not our friend.
He's not our friend. His wife is our friend. No, I'm just kidding. He's our friend, Tony. Welcome, Tony.
Hi.
That's Tony. I'm Carly.
I'm Whitney. Welcome.
And she's uncomfortable. All right, you have any questions for Tony? Whitney loves to talk during this podcast. No. So, why do entomologists get offended when you call them bugs instead of insects?
Bugs are technically hemipterans, so anything in the order Hemiptera are the true bugs. Nope, not on the wall.
No.
Stink bugs and, toe biters and assassin bugs, kissing bugs, those are all bugs. And everything else is insects, you know. It's like
frogs and toes.
You know, if you talk to the herpetologists.
It's not that people are calling them bugs, it's that they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, but bugs, you know, bugs can, it's got such a negative context, you know, like bugs is like, oh no, my computer's fucked up, it's got a bug, or I'm sick, I got a bug, you know, like, so bug is, you know, it's kind of a negative word, and you know, we don't appreciate it, because, you know, insects are very important creatures, and, you know, everybody always talks, I'm sorry, I said the F word, and I don't know if cursing is okay, but yeah, everybody always talks shit about insects, and nobody appreciates the fact that, well, this is counterintuitive, but Beyonce would say, who runs the world? Bugs.
They do.
Yeah, they're, E.O. Wilson said they're the little things that run the world, and he was not wrong, because without them, we were all doomed to not such a happy life.
And not to talk negatively about them, but isn't the one animal that kills more than any other human an insect?
I mean,
Technically,
the mosquito does carry a lot of diseases, and they kill a bunch of people. But yeah, I mean, hey, they are super important insects, mosquitoes. They pollinate a lot of special flowers, a lot of, lady slipper orchids and different flowers are pollinated by mosquitoes because most mosquitoes, only the females feed on blood.
Bitches.
Because, you know, they need the protein for their eggs, but a large majority of mosquito diet consists of nectar. And so they're going in after nectar, and they're pollinating flowers. So mosquitoes are kind of unsung heroes. And yeah, I mean, it's...
say that to a Floridian.
I mean... Not to
stand by that statement.
I'm standing by it.
So when you were a child, was it insects that fascinated you originally?
Oh, yeah.
Was that your go-to?
Yeah. I grew up in Ohio, and we live back in the woods, and I had two sisters, and who wants to play with your sisters? Because they, you know, girls have cooties and all that jazz when you're...
Bugs.
Yeah.
Bugs.
Yeah. So I'd go out into the woods, and I'd flip logs, and I'd flip rocks, and there was always some multi-legged creature under the logs and the rocks that I wanted to know what it was. So I started delving into it. What is it? And, you know, that kind of snowballed into the entomology career. I never thought that I could do anything with this.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to be a coroner for the longest time. what?
We're this back is on not the, death? The first time we've talked about that a lot of us wanted to work with dead people if we didn't work with animals.
Yeah.
That is true. And different fourth facets, person. But yeah.
And then as like the coroner kind of rolled into like, that was about the point in my childhood when CSI came out, and then like Gil Grissom was like, I can use these bugs to figure out when the body died. And I was like, say what? And so I was like, forensic entomology? Looked at that really hard. Did my undergraduate research on forensic entomology. Just put a bunch of pigs out in different habitats and kept track of the phenology of the insects in like shady habitats and like sunny habitats. And then I, you know, made this big bug collection, and I could walk outside and see like a squirrel, and I'd be like, okay, it's in the sun most of the day, and this is the beetle on it, and that's the fly on it, and it's this stage of its life. So it's been there for about like 4 days. And I'm like, yeah, I get that about 4 days ago. I'm like, oh, cool. So yeah, I mean, the bugs are they can tell us a lot if you just pay attention to them.
Was that at the body farm?
No, unfortunately not. I was just at the small
backyard.
The small liberal arts. Yeah. I went to a small liberal arts college in Nebraska, and I got permission from a local farmer to throw dead pigs out all over his property.
You would have loved talking to our last guest because he introduced me to the dead shed. So he uses the beetles to deflush the bones.
Yeah.
And he makes educational biofacts with those bones. But yeah, without having those flesh-eating beetles, he wouldn't be able to do that. So they're important, very important.
Mm-hmm.
So were you one of those little cute nerdy kids that had like the little book with all the bugs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
6 or 7 years old, I got my Peterson's Guide to North American Insects. Before that, I just had like a guide to animals of North America, and the ducks. I really like the ducks, but you know, the insects section was like 3 pages, even though like insects make over 3/4 of all animals in the world. Like the North American Guide to Animals had like 3 pages with like a beetle and a dragonfly and a couple butterflies and moths. And they're like, oh, that's all the insects you need to know. So, you know, it was like, and there's like 400 pages of birds. And so, and then I learned, I was like, wow, why is that? I feel like it's so skewed towards birds because insects are like, but, you know.
Yeah.
Again, people, they're just bugs. Why would you ever want to put them in a book?
Did you specifically ask your parents for that book, or were they just like, wow, he really likes insects,
no,
we should get him this?
It was kind of their thing. They got it from me, and I started getting into it. And, you know, a lot of North American books, they have, like, these crazy, crazy things that only live in Arizona, you know? So, like, from as a kid growing up in Ohio, I know, I, like, would open and like, oh man, a tarantula. One day I'm gonna go find a tarantula. And like, oh man, what, vinegar ruins? That's such a wicked looking animal. One day I'm gonna find me a vinegar. Evidently, Whitney doesn't like vinegar ruins.
Oh, no,
they scare me.
A lot of things scare Whitney. Like last night it was camels. I don't know.
Camels?
Yeah.
They can kick sideways.
Watch out, they spit.
They can kick sideways and kill you.
Yeah, so can cows.
I don't like them either.
So can mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes.
To bring everything.
Just bring it back around.
Be afraid.
Did you have pet insects as a kid as well?
Yeah. I'd catch something and keep it in a jar. And typically, you know, when you're younger, everything eats grass. And it's not quite the case. So I had to refine the technique a little bit. You know, find out, like, oh, man, that beetle with the big sharp mandibles doesn't eat grass.
Yeah.
It eats other insects, so I gotta throw like, you know, other bugs in there, and then they get there and watch them, you know, carnage and
where'd Billy go?
Chewing up of the other. Yeah, but yeah, I kept a lot of things in jars unsuccessfully before I finally realized, you know, how to do it right.
Now I'm from up north, and I believe Ohio, you probably have a lot too. But I used to go out at night and collect the lightning bugs in the jar and have that as like a nightlight and set them free.
Yeah. Lightning bugs or lightning beetles.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No,
when you were a little girl, called them lightning bugs.
Yes, lightning bugs.
I call them fireflies.
Fireflies.
That's a show.
Nathan Fillion.
Oh, he's so
the best firefly.
He's not
just
never
a sex
mind.
Symbol
I know,
for geriatrics and nerds.
I know, it's the show.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, the fireflies are really, really cool, and they were a big part of my childhood. Sad that their numbers are declining, and it's like hard to find fireflies anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, light pollution. Light pollution, when they flash, they can't like communicate as far.
Right.
So light pollution is decimating, and then just urban sprawl.
Mm-hmm.
It's really impacting the firefly, lightning beetle, whatever we're gonna call the lampyrid populations. So.
Do you know how do they do that? Like, how do they light up?
So there's a chemical reaction that happens in inside of their abdomen.
I turn on a switch. Sorry.
You've seen Bugs Bunny? They've got a little cord that hangs off, and they
chemical reaction.
Yeah, and I think the one of the main components in that is a chemical that they just classified was like, I think it was published in like late 80s or mid 90s, so fairly recently, but they dubbed it luciferin, and that's part of the glowiness.
Devil made them do it.
See, it's like, ooh, it's inside a bug and it glows.
It doesn't surprise me that a bug that lights up in the south is because of the devil.
Devil, I'm down to deal with this.
I wonder how many people we can offend. Should we just like start going for it?
For record, as someone from Georgia and whose family's from West Virginia, I feel like I'm allowed to say that.
Okay.
It's a very religious community. And you.
West Virginia.
Go ahead and judge me, Ohio.
No.
Go ahead.
Bless her heart.
West Virginia has the best cryptozoologic creature in the Mothman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Ohio West Virginian Mothman, my favorite. Love him.
Maybe that's why.
Him, her, he, she, it.
They.
We don't know what pronoun.
Maybe that's why I didn't realize that firefly populations were declining, because last time I was in West Virginia, there were lots of them.
Yeah, but yeah, they're way down. From
heading in West Virginia, eating possum, making pies. No, sorry, I can't say it.
You're not from there.
I digress. What were you saying?
Yeah, fire, lightning bugs, lightning beetles,
lampyrids.
But there are some. There are many species of lampyrids that don't light up, but there are actually some small populations of the fireflies. I'll just call them fireflies because that's what people know. There's small populations of those, like, here in Arizona, pretty close, like along the San Pedro River, just down by Tubac, there's a good lampyrid firefly population. And August, if we have a good monsoon season, you know, right along the San Pedro River, you can see the little blinkies, and pretty cool. And most people don't know that they're here in Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen one in Arizona, so I had no idea.
So after studied dead pig bodies,
mm-hmm,
and the bugs that they, insects, mm-hmm, that they attracted, how did you divert from that path? You went and got a master's degree, right? Was that still in forensic entomology?
No. After my undergraduate, I went and didn't know what I wanted to do anymore, because I was like, I had to study like what careers I could go into in entomology, and it was kind of depressing because I was like, 99% of the jobs that I can get in this field are all, I have to go out into a cornfield and I have to kill all the things that I love. Or I have to become an exterminator and kill all the things that I love. Or I have to go into a lab and figure out how to kill all the things that I love. And I was like, this is kind of fucked up. Like, do you ever ask any other animal people? Like, if you ever went up to a mammalogist and like, hey, I want you to go out and kill all of the mammals.
Actually, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's science a little bit, but it's not on like such a mass scale as entomology.
Right.
Like, ooh, it's an icky bug. Pour chemicals all over my house. Make it die. So.
I've met her.
Exterminators have entomology degrees?
Yeah,
yes.
Some of them do.
Gotta learn how to kill them.
And I was fortunate when I did go into graduate school. I had kind of worked with the zoo in Omaha for a little bit, and I got involved with the Salt Creek Tiger Beetle Project, which is an endangered species of beetle in It's only found in like a small portion of land outside of the city of Lincoln in Nebraska, and very habitat specific to the Salt Creeks there. I was fortunate because I was like working on how to rear this endangered species in captivity and then reintroduce it into the wild, and like everybody else in graduate school was like working on new chemicals to kill cornworms in the, you know, cornfields, or, you know, how to kill soybean pests, or how to, you know, destroy this, yeah, crop agricultural stuff. And, you know, so I was very fortunate to not ever have to kill anything except for my pin collections, which is another, you know, kind of sick thing that entomologists do. They're like, I love you, you're beautiful, let me stick a pin through you and make you beautiful forever. Yes, Carly, you...
I was told these are all
amazing.
Oh, they died of natural causes?
Yeah.
Sure. Looking like that? Nope.
Yeah, absolutely. They died of natural causes.
Carly's walls are covered in dead insects that are pinned in frames.
They're not pinned, they're glued.
They're glued. Yeah. They're beautiful. Pristine condition for natural causes death.
Yeah. They're like, that one is on the way out. So that's what happened there. Don't judge me. I have a deer head on my wall.
I don't either.
Right.
Who is that directed at?
No. The five people that listen.
Dusty, take the deer head off your wall.
She doesn't have a deer head either. Anyway, so was it hard? What kind of classes did you take when you studied entomology? Because I tried to take an entomology class while I was in college, and three people signed up, so they canceled it. And you know what class I had to take instead? Botany. You know how good I am with plants. What classes did you get to take?
So,
entomology.
Intro to entomology. Actually, it's the same kind of story in my undergrad. I had a professor who was an entomologist, and she came up to me one day and she's like, do you want to take an entomology class? And I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. And she's like, do you think you could convince anyone else to take an entomology class? And I was like, I'll try.
Yeah.
And it ended up being three of us, but luckily I went to like a super tiny school, and they were like, three people is enough for our class, let's do it. And then, you know, I had two people in my spider identification class, so that was fun.
You wanted to take a spider identification class?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Whitney?
That's a thing.
It's a thing, yeah. There are plenty of entomologists who are afraid of spiders, because insects are not spiders. And for some reason, whatever that is, you throw on two more legs, and they're terrifying. And the same, you know, like... centipedes, like, you throw on, like, 30 more legs? Super terrifying.
This is such a side note. Remember when I called you because there was that injured centipede in one of the exhibits, and you were so excited. Like, I've never heard you that excited on the radio. I'm coming for it. And then it was so sad because it was dead when you got there. But it wasn't dead when I called.
I caught a live one. I'm just saying, like, you know.
Good for you. So do you feel like there are a lot of opportunities in college for people that are interested in insects? Like, I feel like there are a lot of, I don't know, maybe it's just the college I went to. There's a lot of insect labs where
there
I went
are,
to college.
Yeah, increasingly so. Like, if you think about things that you interact with on a daily basis, like, you go to the cabinet in the morning and you open up the pantry and you're looking at tons and tons of grains, you know, you have grains and cereals and breads and all this stuff, and you never think about it, but those were in an agricultural field and they had to keep the insects off them. So those people who were working on killing insects, they did their job because, you know, you got the grains and they processed them and put tons of sugar, which is also a very popular crop that they have to keep insects out of. So the grain and the sugar came together, and there's your breakfast cereal. And then you got the milk that came from the cow that you got to keep the the flies off of from spreading diseases. So entomologists, like the clothing you wear, like cottons and
wools. It's the fabric of our lives.
Can you sing the theme song?
Fabric of our lives.
Beautiful. But yeah, like the clothing you wear every day, the cottons, the wool blends, some of the poly blends, the insects would eat them literally off of your back if they didn't keep, you know, find ways to not, you know, keep the pest, air quotes, out of the equation there. And so, like, it's in the structures you live in, like, you know, termites and ants and other, you know, structural destroying insects. So it's tough to like, when you go through your day, if you really think about it, it's like the 6 degrees of separation between you and an entomologist, you know, like, you know, you've probably done something, a lot of things today that an entomologist had a hand in somewhere down the line. So entomologists have a ton of opportunities, pretty lucrative field if you can find the right gigs to get into.
I guess I was thinking, so when I was in college, like, I wanted to be in an animal behavior lab because I like animals. And so I looked around at, like, the different professors that had the animal behavior labs, and I emailed one, and he let me be in his lab. And I got to his lab, and it was bugs. Like, it was really cool.
It was insects.
Well, I don't know, maybe you're going to have to tell me if they were bugs or not. Because it was all, like, Bombus impatiens. And butterflies. And I guess like at my college, a lot of the labs weren't about killing the insects. They were more about, like, studying their behavior patterns to, like, attract them for pollination purposes.
We're kind of in the age where the pollination thing is getting real big. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been big, but lately with the insect apocalypse coming around, mm-hmm. There's a lot of push for, like, save the pollinators so we can keep food on our tables and things of that nature. But insects, their behaviors can teach us a lot about other species, you know, higher taxa behaviors. So observing insects, I mean, everybody and their, you know, siblings have worked with Drosophila melanogaster, you know, the fruit flies in your genetics lab. That's because they share a large portion of the genetic code of a human. And so working with them, we can see these genetic things, and you don't have to wait, you know, 18 to 20 years before they become reproductively viable. You know, it's like 14 days, and then you've got a new generation of flies. So you can get these real quick turnovers in genetics, and you can see how genes mutate and how things, you can see evolution in action. So yeah, it's nice that it kind of can give us a quick look at the way things work, and you don't have to, like, you know, because if you had to study mice, you know, mice are how old before they can reproduce?
Not very old, a couple
weeks, months, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, longer than a fruit fly,
yeah,
for sure.
Fruit fly, you know, 5 or 6 generations by the time a mouse is ready to go for it,
yeah.
You know?
I was going to say, you can get so many generations in a single school year for your project.
Oh, look, I got white eyes in this one, and I got red eyes in this one, and I got the wings off of that one, and this one can still fly, and, you know, so many genetic traits that you can, good for that. But yeah, so insects can teach us a lot about ourselves and other things.
There's, like, tons of things to talk about when it comes to insects. I got tons of questions in my brain. I was thinking, based on conversations we've had on this podcast before, it's a big food group in a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I work with a chicken or a cow, I can't eat that animal. Do you eat insects? Have you eaten insects? Are they tasty?
Entomophagy is I read a paper once that said 80% of the world's population eats insects as a staple of its protein diet, and the other 20% eats insects on a daily basis accidentally.
Yes.
So, you know, nobody's excluded from eating insects. You know, if you like your salads and things like that, well, you're eating you know, your grains and, you know, all the other plant products. You're eating insects every day. Don't let the world fool you. And insects are a great source of protein. They're low fat. You know, like 20 grasshoppers has as much protein as one steak, but it has, like, almost no fat in it. So if you're looking for, like, high protein, low fat kind of diet, you know, insects is the way to go. Most insects are pretty good. They have mostly, like, a nutty flavor.
I'll just
Turtle is very busy.
Drink intermission. Sorry. That's a good idea, Turtle.
Yeah. Drink break. Everyone take one. Stay hydrated.
Do you need more wine?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Not yet.
You might need more wine.
I mean, I'm already feeling it.
Yeah, eating insects, it's not, it's a growing thing. They're actually starting to farm human-grade crickets and mealworms and all kinds of stuff like that for like protein, you know, sources. And, you know, it's been suggested that that may be one of the ways to like reduce the global warming is like turn away from beef and poultry and, you know, other large stocks and turn to insects because, you know, you almost, if you compare like the food and the water that you have to give to the insects in order to produce, you know, enough to feed large populations of humans as compared to like cows and chickens and pigs and things. Like it's, you know, it's a much smaller energy investment into the product to get out, you know, something that's actually much more healthier and produces a lot less greenhouse gases and things like that. So, you know, insects, eating insects, it might be one of the steps that we have to go through to, you know, kind of keep the world from, you know, turning into a fiery
shithole.
Hell, yes. So, yeah, and entomophagy. And, you know, you can try, you don't want to go around eating just any bugs.
Right.
You should know a little bit because there are lots of insects that you can really hurt yourself if you eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other insects that you might have some side effects. Like, you know, here in Arizona, we've got some blister beetles that people are familiar with as the Spanish fly because they cause priapism, you know? You eat the bug and you just get a raging boner. And people use them to help with sexual, you know, performance. So
no, this is great because the thing is there are people that are killing rhino horns for this very same reason when all they have to do is eat this bug.
Yeah.
You don't even need a little blue pill. You can just go and eat this bug.
Yeah.
Raging boner.
Raging boner.
I didn't think that was going to be what a blister beetle did to you.
I mean,
well, you can create some blisters if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a blister beetle and you hold it against your skin, it will reflex bleed, and in its blood it has cantharin, which is a chemical that causes burns on the skin and can cause like serious blistering.
What, does it blister your tongue when you eat it? You just swallow it?
Fast.
You like kind of pre-kill it so it doesn't...
Squish it up?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like dry it and then the whatever chemical that's in the...
Put it in some tequila or something?
Just pop back.
Yeah, if you like throw it in, chew it up, and it's going to be not pleasant for you.
Have you experienced this? Have you eaten one of these?
I have not had any Spanish fly.
Now she needs more wine.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought your wife tonight.
And yeah, they found some spider venoms that can, there's components in some wandering spider venoms. When people get bit, it's just like,
boing.
Boing. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is like on the blue pill commercials, they say, you know, if this erection lasts more than 8 hours, you should go see your doctor. Well, these do last way more. And so, you know, people are...
Maybe that's the problem why they're not promoting it.
Troublesome in some of these.
No? Should we stop? Would you all like us to stop talking about boners?
Okay, but I feel like I can clarify that you have not.
I have not tried any of these things, no. But
thanks for chiming in, Jenny. Okay. No, this is one of the many... We're solving the world's
ways
problems.
Ways that insects can help people. So the next time you see something, instead of being like, ooh, gross, it's just a bug, you should look at it and be like, can I eat it? Can it give me a rage erection?
You know what? It's a good thing to know. I've known people that have had the problem. So if a fly is a solution, that's fascinating. So that's really, had no idea.
Just pointing out the little things that a lot of people know about insects and that can...
Yeah. Stop killing rhinos and pangolins for the reason
that
of
doesn't
that.
Work.
That doesn't
Eat
work.
Eat the beetle.
Eat
that
the beetle.
Works.
Are there any other pharmaceuticals that can be replaced by insects?
If you want to kill a man.
Yeah, you can do that. There's a lot of properties in some of the honeybee products. Like honey itself is antifungal and antibacterial. And a lot of holistic medicine, like large, open, infected wounds, if you pour honey on them and wrap them, the properties in honey will keep them from getting infected, and your body seems to respond well, and honey kind of produces, you know, a stimulant that helps your skin heal faster. So, like, honey is great.
Yeah.
And if you get hungry, you can just lick it.
Yes.
No, you don't lick it. You don't lick the infected honey-coated infection. No. They've been used in veterinary science a lot, that sort of honey.
And then the propolis from the honeybee, the resin that they gather off of trees and mix with the wax. Like, I worked with bees in my undergrad, and I also wrestled in college. So,
I wrestled bees.
Yes.
Beehives.
Get, like, an impetigo or a ringworm infection. I chew up the propolis, and I'd stick it on the infection, and I wrap it, and then a couple days later, I take it off, and ringworm gone, impetigo gone.
I wonder if, like, cats would let you do that. Those cats with the ringworm, you know?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know.
Just put some honey on your cat.
No.
Don't do that either.
Way to bring it back to the beetle.
They're not going to be able to use any of this.
Oh, we'll use it all.
Yeah. No.
It's marked as explicit for a reason. I will take out the offensive things, but I will not take out the boner things.
Because you have to define what's offensive then. Back to eating real quick. What do you recommend people try? What tastes the best? How do you cook a bug?
Well,
Cajun sauce? I don't know.
A lot of them are good. Just like a light pan sear. Like waxworms.
Waxworms.
Waxworms are very fatty. So light, quick pan sear. Maybe, you know, if you have like a little peanut oil or some olive oil, just real quick kind of saute. And then very bacony. Like bacon-y?
Don't they like explode in your mouth though? Because they're kind of like
they
pushy.
They have a lot of
in your mouth.
Yes. You know, you would think like you bit to them because they're squishy, just pop right in your mouth like a grape.
If you eat them raw, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You take an insect.
But if you're cooking them, that
like
juice just kind of comes out.
They kind of harden on the inside. You know. Whitney's done.
She's been done. Okay, so waxworms are good to start.
Yeah, waxworms are good because they have a kind of a bacony flavor. Some of the green stink bugs, if you give them a quick cook, they have a spice, like a pepper, peppery spice to them.
Does that come from the stink section?
Good.
It
might be the chemicals.
Of the stink taste like pepper.
In Sonora and other parts of Mexico, they use the giant mesquite bug.
Oh.
Before it matures, they'll collect it off of the mesquite trees and salt, you know, brine soak it overnight, and then give them a quick, and then they'll use them on tacos and things.
Okay.
They also like chapulitas, which are grasshoppers. They eat lots of grasshoppers.
Grasshoppers is like a big thing, right? Lots of people eat grasshoppers and crickets.
Grasshoppers and crickets, they kind of nutty. It depends. Their flavor comes a lot from what they ate, because, you know, they gotta load them. So if you feed them, like, strawberries or, you know, fruits, they're kind of sweet.
You flavor your crickets?
Yeah.
Pretty flavors.
So, but cicadas are really good. I like
cicadas. Have you tried all the ones you mentioned, except for the beetle that we talked about?
Yeah, not Spanish
not
fly.
Not the Spanish fly.
Beetle. But all the rest of these...
Have you tried tarantulas? A lot of...
I've not eaten any spiders.
Okay.
That I know of.
The five that go into... I know that's a myth.
You haven't consciously eaten any spiders.
And that's mostly an urban myth.
Yeah.
They go into
your ear instead. And then have their babies.
She's saying that because she knows I went to the ear doctor today.
Huh.
And they just start crawling.
I mean... I've been to the urgent care at least 5 times in my life to have insects removed from my ears. Because black lighting at night, they just fly right in there.
A potato bug flew in my ear? I don't know what the real name is. Potato bug.
Potato bugs don't fly.
What are those things that... Pinto beetle. You know those things here that fly? That look like a pinto bean? What are those called?
You know the ones that fly.
The insect that flies.
The specific.
It's brown.
It is brown because it looks like pinto bean. Pinto beans are brown. It's like this big.
It flies.
And it's brown. and it flies.
Maybe it's the pinto beetle.
At night.
At night.
Around lights.
Okay. All right, you narrowed it down from like 1 billion species to like.
Do you not know what I'm talking about?
999.
But it was in your ear, and it
flew in my ear, and I was really scared, and I started screaming because it was in my freaking ear. And then
it's unpleasant. They start scratching on your eardrum
to save me by smacking me in the head until I like popped out of my ear.
Right.
I feel like Jake was waiting for that opportunity to just smack you in the head. Was he hitting you to get the insect out, or was he hitting you to shut up?
It worked, so it came out, but it was so scary.
The more effective method is just get some rubbing alcohol
and
do an ear shot, you know? Just let it sit there until the insect dies, and then pour the alcohol out, and then you can take like a pair of tweezers and grab it and pull it out.
No, I've seen cockroaches, like, videos of them like having to grab them out of ears, because that's a pretty common one, especially the, you know, more urban areas like cities. Yeah. You find your bug yet?
No, don't search potato bug.
I mean,
it is scary.
Well, the potatoes are roly-polies, right?
That's a Jerusalem cricket, also known as a potato bug.
Yeah. I'm like, that's not.
They're cute. I used to like tap them and they would roll, and then I'd flick them.
Yeah.
That wasn't nice. I like bugs as a kid.
I had fun down in Madera Canyon. There's some pallid bats that rest above the bathrooms at Madera Canyon.
Yeah.
And they like to, it's a feeding roost, so they bring all the bugs back, insects, and they eat them. We were blacklighting at Madera Canyon, but I like to go down and visit the bats to see what, you know, so what they're finding.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there and they had a Jerusalem cricket potato bug, and one of the bats ate it. But they didn't eat the head, because these things have like crazy mandibles can really bite. So the bat ate the abdomen and the thorax off of the Jerusalem cricket and kind of spit the head down.
Yeah, they're smart.
And so I was like, oh man, a Jerusalem cricket head, that's pretty cool. And I reached down and I touched it. And it bit me.
Yeah.
Like blood out the end of my finger. And I was like, it just got spat out by a bat. I was like, oh my God.
So what you're telling me was the bat was smarter than you.
I mean, most animals are.
Right.
Pretty cool. And then that same night, there's this really cool bat fly hanging out on the head of one of the bats. That was amazing. So you had one of the June beetles flew in your ear. That sounds completely unpleasant because, they have like spines on their legs.
That's why I was screaming.
I've had lady beetles
that's why you were
in
screaming.
My ear. I've had moths and caddisflies, and you know, none of those have like crazy spikes.
Because I could fucking feel it crawling, and I was like, this bitch is gonna perforate my eardrum.
Yeah, they go for it.
And jumped on the opportunity to smack me in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm around a black light at night, we always have a bottle of alcohol, you know, to preserve specimens, but.
Also
mostly,
for your ears.
Mostly for like something flies in your ear, you know, squirt
it
right in there.
Fast?
Yeah, they die pretty quickly.
That's good to know. And everyone has hand sanitizer on them now, so like would that work the same way?
I don't know. It's maybe a little gooey. I don't know if the doctors recommend squirting hand sanitizer in your ear.
I don't think they do. Please
don't.
The life lessons from this episode.
Probably also don't recommend eating beetles to get boners, but I don't know.
Yet.
That's because they're in the pocket of the pharmaceutical company.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
preach.
Common.
Preach.
But that's offend some more people. Doctors definitely listen to this.
Yeah, I used to love watching the bats in Florida when I went out my morning run, because I was out like before the sun went up and they were eating all the mosquitoes. I was just so thankful for that. But mosquitoes are important.
Yeah.
But bats are too.
It's a food chain. You need the mosquitoes to feed the bats.
Yeah. Gotta love that food chain.
And you need bats to pass on the rabies. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I'm kidding. I just wanted to offend you.
Let's talk about how dumb prairie dogs are.
Oh. Actually,
fighting words.
You wanna
smug little faces and their chirpy.
You
want to
talk
voices?
About some dirty animals? Like prairie dogs harbor fleas that harbor the
bubonic plague.
Yeah.
There you go. So
I love that fun fact about prairie dogs. You want the plague?
Little plague spreaders. Furry little potatoes, thinking they're so harmless when they're going to kill you.
And the Yersinia pestilens bacteria is really cool because in the flea, it actually creates like a blockage in the back of the gut of the flea. So it all like, it makes like a wall. And so it kind of propagates in the gut. And so the flea will take in a bunch of blood. And then it'll go.
Is that how a flea sounds?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. It'll jump over to its next meal. And it still feels hungry because the stomach isn't completely full. And it starts feeding on that. But when it taps in, it kind of regurgitates the last blood. And that's how the plague is spread.
That's how diseases get spread by mosquitoes, too, right? It's like the infection accidentally.
It's in their salivary.
Now, if you were a bat, you'd be more polite about it, because the vampire bat just makes a little slit and just licks up the blood and flies away. Not spreading that disease. Okay, they spread rabies. Damn it.
But, like, the kissing bugs.
Chagas.
Chagas disease, but Chagas disease is not spread through saliva.
Feces.
This is posteriorization. So, the kissing bugs here in Arizona, they like to feed, and they're very, you know, very polite about it. They'll go off, they go off into a corner and go to the bathroom. But in you know, kind of Central Mexico and South America, the kissing bug species down there, after they're done feeding, they turn around and they defecate near the wound. So when it starts to itch, you rub the feces into the wound. And fun fact about the Chagas disease, it is the same genus as the sleeping sickness that the tsetse fly. They're both trypanosomes.
Wow.
Medical entomology is also an interesting course that I got to take or study insect vector diseases.
That is, so cool.
That is actually really interesting.
That is really cool.
Like, vectors are fascinating.
Yeah.
Disease is really interesting. I mean, it's sad, but it's really interesting.
And as we started off the podcast with, important.
It is, yeah. No, it's important to understand like the mechanisms of how things get passed so you can treat them, for sure. Insects are important.
Super important. Like if you look at the whole structure of life, if you think about it like a pyramid, you know, you've got the plants kind of on the bottom, and then the next level up is the insects. And everybody's like, kill all the insects, they suck. But if you take that level out, the whole house is going to collapse. And
well, the more people knew about the boner thing, I don't think they want to kill insects.
At least not blister beetles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They would be safe.
Save the blister beetles.
Or they would go extinct from overhunting.
It's crazy, though, because one person's poison is another person's pleasure. Like, if a person eats a blister beetle, you get, you know, sexually stimulated. But if a horse eats a single blister beetle, it's dead.
What?
Damn!
What?
Yeah, so you have to watch when you're harvesting hay for, you know, livestock, because blister beetles can kill livestock.
That's crazy. What does it do if a female eats one? Not a horse, a human. I mean, she's not going to get a raging boner. Does she get a raging lady boner?
I've heard reports that, it works wonders for the female libido.
I feel like I know someone that would try it for us. We all are thinking of the same person.
Oh, she would. She loves a good lady boner. Yeah. And she also has eaten many insects. She's eaten caterpillars, scorpions.
Yes. When we were talking about preparing the insects, those caterpillars stink. Mm-hmm. Does she just cook them improperly?
No.
She stinks up our whole building.
Eating the caterpillars?
Yes. Cooking the caterpillars.
Well, cooking, yeah.
Yeah. And the last 2 years, they have planned their migration for when she's been on vacation. And marked on all the little caterpillar calendars. Like, that bitch is out of town. It's safe.
Anyway, bringing it back. So insects have really cool adaptations, too, and great ways to defend themselves. Because, you know, when you are studying, you know, birds and mammals and, I mean, teeth, bitey parts, those kind of things. But insects have some really nasty stings and bites. What ones have you experienced? What ones are the most dangerous?
Have you been stung by a tarantula hawk?
Never. To get stung by a tarantula hawk,
I don't like those.
You have to physically work to get stung by a tarantula hawk.
Unless you're a tarantula.
You have to, like, torment them, right?
Like, People are terrified because of the Schmidt Pain Index and Coyote Peterson, the biggest douchebag in the world. So,
come at me, bro.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. He's the worst.
Harassing animals to get them to bite you is like
to gain popularity is not a conservation message.
No.
I don't care. Yeah. You can argue with
because
what you want.
It's fear media. Like
He's
not helping conserve these animals. He's like, this can bite you and it hurts. And people are like, oh shit, it can bite me and it hurts.
I
want to
kill
it.
Or that
or try it. Yeah.
Human can bite you and it would hurt.
Here, let's try it.
Anything with a mouth can bite you in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we see. Anything with a mouth can bite. But if it has a stinger, it hurts too.
And with the insects, the stinger is a modified ovipositor. So any insect that has ever stung you is a lady.
All the men that listen are clapping right now. Oh, that's right.
If there are some male insects that have spines on the end of their pseudopenis. And so they just stab you with the end of their adagus or their insect penis, and they just jam it into you, and it feels like a sting, but there's no venom associated with it.
I knew a guy with a pseudo penis. Is that the same thing? No.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
You made him just this train of
so much fun.
That was like one of my favorite thing about male bees, though, is they had little mustaches and they couldn't sting you. He's like, I just pick you up with my hand and just walk around with my little friend.
So people will be like terrified of a tarantula hawk wasp, and you know, you can go over and gently scoop it up, and you can show them like it's not gonna sting you unless you try and hurt it, because you know venom is costly metabolically and stuff like that. And they're like, oh cool. But then you can tell the difference between a male and a female tarantula hawk, some morphological differences. And so then you press it together and you're like, but it's a male and it won't sting you anyway. And then falls off.
Well, the female there's a reason for the tarantula hawk that the female has the stinger, and that's because she needs to subdue the tarantula to
and that's
inject.
What most stings are about.
Yeah.
Most stings are for procurement of a food source, or you know, a lot of them are for just protection.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to use them unless you're doing something that warrants protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people swat things, and you know, the first thing most people do when they see a bee or a wasp is they try and punch it in the face. You know, they start swinging madly at it. And what is something going to do if you start swinging madly at it? It's going to get pissed and it's going to start defending itself, right? And so that's when people get stung. So if you just calmly are like, okay, wasp, what do you want? And it lands on you and it does its thing and then it goes away. Not going to get stung.
Well, if you back up into their hive with your cart, they will also sting
you.
Yes.
You know, because that's their home, and you know, they're just defending their turf.
Well, maybe they shouldn't hide it so well so you wouldn't know it's there.
Or if you drive your cart with your mouth open, sometimes they just flutter it in.
Yeah, then you're trying to eat them. I can see, you know.
So what, have you been stung or bitten by something wicked?
The worst bite / sting that I've gotten from insects was probably from a white spotted assassin bug. Very painful.
I wonder how they get their names.
Assassin bugs are predatory hemipterans, so they're true bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a little rostrum that they inject, rostrum, mouth part, little straw sucky thing. They kind of hide in the shadows, and when something walks by, they jump out, they grab it, and they stab it, and then they drink its fluid, so like an assassin. Worked with those in Omaha, and I was changing out their bedding and cleaning their cage, and caught one in between the egg crate and my thumb, and it got mad, and it turned around and it bit me, and just terrible, terrible pain, and it kind of like ate a little hole in my finger, and then I became very sensitive to the venom. And one of the things that the white spotted assassin bug does is when they get scared, they will aerosolize their venom into the air. So I started like having to wear respirators to work that, because if I breathe it in, I'd like, you know, couldn't breathe or something like that. And so that was probably the worst bite. And then the giant water bug, aka the toe biter, has a very similar bite. It was super painful. The yellow paper wasps, Polistes flavus, is down here in Arizona. Got nailed by one of those. Don't recommend it. You get stung and bit from time to time. a couple scorpion stings, but none of those have ever really bothered me.
Have you been stung by the bark? Scorpion?
Yes.
And nothing? Nothing?
Somebody's making a face like something happened.
So,
nothing?
So, I got stung by a bark scorpion.
Yes.
I got stung on the tip of the left middle finger. Because a young lady had put her hand on it. And I...
Your finger or the scorpion?
On the scorpion.
Oh, like a child.
Yeah, like a child.
Oh, I thought you were being like chivalrous.
So you were like saving the child.
I was looking for the scorpions at night. And she reached over the wall. What are you doing? She grabbed it. And I like put my hand up and blocked the tail. And so then I grabbed it and picked it up and talked to them about...
Don't ever do that.
Like,
your husband is a hero.
Yeah, like honestly.
Yeah.
Scorpions. Oh, that's just... Then the story spirals off into a terrible direction. So got stung and had never been stung by a bark scorpion. Been stung by
yellow.
Lots of other scorpions before. I was like, ooh. So I'm going to like write down. So I write down on my hand like what time I got stung. And I'm like, see how this progresses. And almost immediately there was like numbness in the tip of the finger,
mm-hmm.
and it started to move down my arm, and it got to like mid forearm, the numbness.
Mm-hmm.
But then something incredible happened. Like
you
got a boner.
No, so it like supercharged the nerves. So
okay.
like when the wind blew, like I could, it's like this crazy euphoric feeling.
You got high.
It was amazing. It was, yeah. So it was an amazing feeling. First of all, don't go out and get stung by a bark scorpion because they can cause serious problems. But I just, and it's interesting because in the original description of the bark scorpion sting, one of the side effects is, it's in an old paper and it's like, you know, Arizona bark scorpions, and you're reading through and it's like, you know, pain and swelling and numbness and da da da. And then right at the end it says fornication as one of the side effects.
Are you saying you did get a
I started like waving my arm around, and as I waved my arm around, the feeling of euphoria was like,
my God, he was like
almost
Molly.
There.
He was on Molly, basically.
And I like drove home that night with my hand out the window of the car, and like the wind rushing was like, oof, it was amazing.
So are you addicted to bark scorpions now?
I've considered doing it again, but I haven't.
So, it's like, but when you know,
that could have been the first time, you know, that could have been like all fun and games
right.
the first time. The
yeah.
second time, it's things being like, holy shit, now I'm in the hospital.
Because that's also like taking Molly.
Yeah. But I mean, with like a lot of insect venom, like bee stings, you continuously get a worse reaction
every time.
Or maybe he'll get a more euphoric reaction. It'll be like he can go grab some lightning bugs and like shake them up as glow sticks and then rave all night long.
Didn't that also happen to our lady boner friend? She was like...
No, she wasn't euphoric. She had a weird reaction.
She had
nystagmus.
That's what it was. They were like, are you having hallucinations?
Yeah, no, she just had nystagmus.
Her eyes started like shaking.
I had a bad reaction.
That's, you know, it's a neurotoxin, so it's attacking.
It's not
really serious.
So I got home after my sting thinking I was fine, like the numbness, you know, that my heartbeat was a little rapid. But I got home, tried to sleep. And I had muscle thrashing. And for those of you listening, the five people that don't know what it is, basically my arm was flailing about on its own.
Was it
euphoric at all. It was really, I'm trying to sleep, and all of a sudden my arm's like going up in the air and like smacking me. And I felt like I was in like Beetlejuice. You know when he like gets a hold of those people and they start, you know. They like, come on, I wanna go home.
So much singing.
It brings it back to Beatles.
Yeah.
Right. Day.
Beetlejuice.
But
Beetlejuice. You know, if you pay attention during, you know, movies, you'd understand things better.
Got it.
All right.
Classic.
Fun times.
But yeah, that is an unfortunate side effect that can happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not something that you want to just go out and try for kicks and giggles.
No.
But, you know, I was fortunate that I had like
and I was not.
The awesome side effects. And
but you saved that child.
You did.
Because, yeah, young
children. And maybe that was your reward.
Just done by the park person there, like in the hospital.
Yeah, it was instant karma. You did a good deed.
Did a good deed. You got a great car ride home. Ooh, I can smell pretty colors. My mom feels like jealous. Meanwhile, I'm like middle of the night Googling what the fuck is wrong with my arm.
And I'm over there like,
let's dance. Let's dance. Let's dance. I'm sorry, I just thought I'd get one more song in. So bugs, insects.
Any other fun? That was the most interesting thing. I don't know how you can top that.
Yeah, I mean that was the most interesting by far. Like, you know, the assassin bug one, like, it was like scary. It's like, oh man, there's a hole forming
in
my finger, and I was like, that's not cool.
I knew a girl that got bit by a brown recluse, and she had a hole in her leg from it. And that was really a nasty one.
You ever been bit by a spider?
That's good. I don't think it's recommended.
Yeah.
No euphoric
response
there. There has been in the news a new type of spider. Have you heard much about that? That all black tarantula looking.
The one from Florida? The chlamydia? From Florida?
Did you say chlamydia?
Chlamydia.
Oh.
There is chlamydia in Florida.
There's a lot of chlamydia in Florida. Spring break!
So, but yeah, I've read about that. Recently, that's cool. I mean, they're not even including spiders, just the insects. There's a million described species, and they, you know, estimate there's over like up to a billion species of insects. But you know, a lot of them look similar, and genetically different, and so there's not a lot of people out there actually looking. And so there are new species discovered like every year. Just like they've been hanging out at your house. And you say, yeah, it's a fly, but they did some studies in Los Angeles, and they found that these little humpback flies in the Faraday family, they would go, like, onto different city blocks or to different apartments, and they're like, well, that one that lives in this apartment is a species, and this one that lives across the street is another species, because they just, like, have these little metapopulations that have been separated for so many fly generations that now that... they're genetically distinct, and they're like their own species. And it's like they went around this little neighborhood, and they described, you know, a handful of new species of flies. And they're like, oh,
they're just evolving fast.
Yeah. So.
Is that like a life goal to discover a species of insect?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What would you name it?
I don't know.
Jenny, I.
Lady boner.
I don't know. It would.
Depend on the species.
It depends. You know, like naming. Things after people.
That's taboo.
Taxonomically, it's very, you know.
Not even Hildy. You wouldn't even name it after Hildy.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably after a characteristic, if it wasn't already taken. But if, you know, if there was already, you know, in the genus had that name of the characteristic, then I'd have to, you know, get creative with it. Or, you know, maybe I'd name it after a famous naturalist or, you know, someone who influenced my life. I don't know.
Not after yourself.
No. That's,
no one does that.
Absolutely.
Not anymore.
Narcissism.
Yeah.
I feel like that's
the
day.
Biggest,
yeah.
Biggest
yeah,
taboo
exactly
in taxonomy.
Thinking about is a Sir Linnaeus.
Okay. Do you have a favorite, you know, insect or species of insect? Or?
You're not supposed to play favorites.
You're not supposed to, but you do. I was not the favorite kid.
That's sad.
No, it was very clear.
Well, I researched the tiger beetles, so I have a special spot in my heart for tiger beetles. Beautiful. They're you know, some of the fastest insects in the world. They run at speeds, you know, up to like 8 to 10 times their body length in a single second.
What speed is that?
It's not going to be
like,
fast in miles
some,
per
some
hour.
Of the some of the fastest ones, if, you know, if you, it's like up to 5 miles an hour for a tiny tiny thing. There's some cockroaches that run a little faster than
yes.
that.
You don't have to tell anyone here that.
But yeah, tiger beetles are super fast, and they're actually like, they run so fast. They're predatory, so they kind of like see things, and then they run over, and they grab them, and they have these big... impressive mandibles that they chew them up. They're
delicious.
Prey with. You'll see them out in the field, and they'll like run for a short distance, and then they'll stop and they'll like do some spins, because when they run so fast that their brain cannot process the information. So
I do that too.
They're running blind. And so they stop and they're like, okay, all right, this is where I am. And then they, you know, just run off again. They're really cool, and a lot of them are habitat specific, and a lot of them are pretty threatened because of their habitat specificity.
Sorry, I was looking something up because there's a beetle that I wanted to really find. I took Turtle on one of our adventures for her birthday, and we went to the coral sand dunes, and there was a specific beetle
pink.
In that. And it's,
that's the tiger beetle?
I love that thing. Is that, are they related?
Yeah, they're a species of tiger beetle.
We didn't find it.
Yeah, they're pretty specific.
Yeah.
In spring, like late spring. Is the best time to find them.
Yeah, I think we might have been there in October.
Yeah, they've long could find the larva safe, which is pretty cool too.
I asked Turtle's help, but she was too distracted.
I mean, yeah.
You know.
I haven't been to the coral pink sand dunes, but.
Yeah, she had a great time, but did not find the beetle.
Love to go up there and see those.
Would you then pin it and put it on your wall?
No, are they endangered or?
Yeah. They're kind of threatened.
Yeah.
Protected. The coral. Coral pink sand dunes, there's no click.
I was kidding. But how do you determine if an insect is endangered?
There's not a big population of them.
I know, but like, how do you, would you do like a survey of a certain square footage and then just extrapolate like, oh, that must be how many there are. Like, they're so small, how do you know how many there are?
Well, for the Salt Creek tiger beetle, yeah. Would go out and do counts on the salt flat. Like we already knew that, you know, the city of Lincoln being built took away most of their habitat. It used to be a big salt marsh.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
And yeah, so they have very little habitat left. So we'd go out onto the salt marshes and we kind of do like rough counts. We'd like, okay, we start at this end of the flat and kind of move through and count like, okay, there's like 20 beetles in this area, and then we move over here and count, and then we do the math and, you know, kind of extrapolate that out to estimate. And in some of the years that I counted those Salt Creek tiger beetles, their numbers were like 120 total individuals in a season.
Wow.
Like super, super low. A lot of insects probably are almost definitely need protection, like some sort of federal protection. No one will realize it until it's way too late. And, you know, like, they just listed the rusty-patched bumblebee a couple years ago. Less than 5 years ago, I think. It used to be found, like, through most of the Midwestern United States, and now it's found in, like, you know, less than 4 states, you know. So, like, the entire... And there's a butterfly that's a prairie specialist that used to be found from Pennsylvania all the way to the Rocky Mountains, and now it's found in one isolated patch in Pennsylvania. It's found in like Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, and a little bit into like Wisconsin and Minnesota area. But like most of its range has been destroyed and it's not down there anymore. So yeah, there's a lot of insects. There's no insects listed for protection in the state of Arizona, even though there really should be. California, they tried to list the Western monarch that overwinters in California as an endangered species because their numbers are down over 90% since like the mid-90s.
Right.
And the Californian legislature actually says that it defines an animal as an insect is not defined as an animal, so they do not qualify for any sort of protection from the government. They can't get any money from
the
government.
Because people follow that migration. That's like a
That's a huge thing. But so yeah, it's kind of back against the wall because a lot of these things are in super trouble. But you know, it's just a bug. When I was working with the Salt Creek Tiger Girl, we actually went to a public forum meeting about, you know, designating critical habitat. This good old boy, he came in with a piece of cardboard that was like a foot by a foot square, and he held it up in front when he got his turn to talk, and he's like, this is 1 foot by 1 foot long, and he held up a jar of you know, mason jar, and he's like, there's 200 sunflower seeds. These are the same size as those goddamn beetles. And he threw the one-by-one piece of cardboard down on the ground, and he poured 200 sunflower seeds on it. He's like, that's all the fucking land that these goddamn beetles need. They don't need, you know, 1,000 acres of land because they're this small. And, you know, you have to keep your head in situations like that. But I wanted to stand up and be like, how many fucking bedrooms do you have in your house? How many bathrooms do you have? Don't you just need like 3 feet by like 4 foot square, about 6 feet tall? That's all the space that you need to live in, right? If that's the logic we're using, right. You know, you don't want to fucking get technical about it. You know, it's hard enough to fight people sometimes.
Especially those good old boys.
Especially those good old boys. You know, it's like, I want to grow corn on that land. I'm like, that land has a salinity in the soil that corn would never
think. You're going to grow corn in a salt flat?
No.
It's like a nasty-ass corn.
Yeah, so...
I thought fish didn't get respect. Insects have it way worse. I mean, insects are really important. We've said this now five times because of many, many things.
Yeah. We have just scratched the surface.
Right. So how can we help insects? Call your legislators and say, hey, they're animals too. Like, picket line...
You know, threaten them with bed
bugs. Ooh, with bed bugs. Or kissing bugs. But not the ones that poop politely. ooh, put those beetles in their drinks. And then they all get raging boners. Because most of those legislators are men.
They don't need that.
Yeah, but that'd be hilarious.
Maybe that is the way to go about it.
I mean, take it back to high school.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's embarrass a group of men trying to get work done.
That's definitely how you get them on your side, is by embarrassing
actually
them.
Maybe that's not the way to go, because
right, maybe not,
you know, no. To quote the good old boys, the Lord only gave the human man enough blood to one head at a time, so
right, forgot about that part. So how do we help insects?
You can participate in dark sky nights, you know, like shut off your porch lights, and you know,
my mom does that, but that's because she's terrified of kissing bugs.
I mean, that's great for insects, because the light pollution distracts, especially during a lot of breeding seasons. You know, like for the lampyard, the fireflies, you know, if you have lower light situations, they can actually communicate with each other through the little blinkies. And then they can find, because that's how they find mate. You know, right. They're flashing and they know. The blinky pattern.
That's like, how I find a mate too. I just flash someone.
You might want to go get some luciferin and just, you know, close.
Just give him some fly.
It's a Spanish fly and luciferin.
Oh, there you go. I now know how to get a man.
Finally.
Thank you, Tony. What were we talking about? How to save the insects.
That works. So,
any kind of plants you can plant in your yard?
Yeah, you can help create habitat. Try not to jump on my soapbox here, but one of the worst things that you can do is to have a lawn. Like, lawns piss me off so much. Like, why do you...
Especially here in Arizona.
Like, why you move to Arizona and plant a lawn? Like, the desert's beautiful. Like,
what about Florida with all the grass and then the fertilizer goes into the lagoon?
Exactly.
I hear you.
They use tons and tons of pesticides on those things.
Preach.
Like lawns are the worst. Like, why not just have like some native like plants in your lawn? Like, there's a lot of cool plants in Florida. In the Midwestern United States, guess what? A prairie is all fucking grass. That's what you want in your lawn. Plant prairie grass. You know, and some flowers and stuff. Here in Arizona.
Don't hurt.
Why did you move to the desert? Because it was beautiful and you wanted a patch of grass and some stupid non-native shrubs and shit like that? Mm-hmm. No, plant cactus and native mm-hmm. plants. Like, absolutely. Help them out, these insects, by planting, you know, choosing native landscaping plants, avoiding lawns, you know, shutting your lights off at night. Don't use pesticides. You know, there's other ways to get the same results. Other than, you know, poisoning yourself and the environment, you know?
I mean, that's another pro to turning your lights off at night, right? You're also not attracting all the insects to your house. Yeah.
And there's natural, like, marigolds in a garden will help keep a lot of bugs and pests away.
There's stuff that keeps insects away. They've done studies in the UK where in agricultural fields they'll plant, like, four rows of corn. You know, they'll do four rows of corn, and then they'll do a strip of wildflowers in the middle. And natural predators of corn earworm and, you know, things that go and eat the corn will breed in that natural strip. And it doesn't take much out of the field. You know, you're not giving up thousands of acres to wildflowers. You know, you're not going to break your bank. You know, you're not going to get a shitty crop because, you know, you planted a little bit of wildflower in there. But they don't have to use pesticides. They don't have to use herbicide because there's things in that strip that'll go out and they'll eat the weeds, or they'll go out and they'll eat the caterpillars, you know, the earworms that are getting into the corn. And they are natural predators, you know? So if we lived in harmony and, you know, kind of helped the insect along, like, they would keep each other in check, and then we wouldn't have to dump terrible chemicals all over everything.
I like that the pro-grass people are the people we were worried about offending today.
Damn those pro-grassers. God. So I was watching an episode of Outlander, and they were trying to stop, what bug were they trying to stop from getting their crops that was, like, coming through, so they used smoke. Started a fire. I know you watch it.
I do not believe I've seen that episode.
I do believe you did.
I know. It's not on Netflix. I haven't seen it yet.
You've not seen that episode? Really?
I've not.
She's not listening to the plot line. Yeah.
It might have been
I watch it for the history.
Yeah, we can watch it strictly for the history.
Yeah.
But they use smoke to kind of have the bugs, insects, pass over their crops. I can't remember what they were. It was like a grasshoppers? Or?
I mean, it could have been like locusts.
Locusts! It was locusts. Yeah. Locusts were coming, so they used the smoke.
Oh, the historical plague locusts.
Yes. The plague locusts.
Was this after they come to the New World?
Or? Yeah, they were in the New World. I think it was season 4. Did you guys not see this, really?
We watched it.
You had to have seen it. You don't remember? It was... No, it wasn't Men in Kilts. It was when Jamie wasn't there, and they left behind Roger and Brianna, and, like, the people didn't have faith in him, and the locusts were coming.
That's a season that's not up yet.
Wait, oh, spoiler alert!
It is season 5. It's season 5, oh, right.
So I
tapped into my mom's Stars account and got ahead of y'all.
So
you won't
have no
be.
Idea
you won't
well,
be
now I have something to look forward to when
yeah,
we
there's,
watch Outland.
There's an insect episode.
Parts. Yeah.
And some more nudity. Oh, we're wrapping it up.
Now that we've totally digressed.
I mean, did I say nudity? I mean history.
We've been talking about men this whole time.
There are... organizations, Monarch Watch, the Xerces Society is huge in invertebrate conservation. You know, just make smart decisions, you know, maybe even start thinking about eating some insects.
Yeah.
Try some crickets. If you're allergic to shrimp, they have chitin, which is what you're allergic to in shrimp and lobster. So if you're allergic to shellfish, do not eat insects.
Oh, good one.
But you know, try them out. You know, they're really good. Some of them take sauces really well, you know, little... the giant water bugs actually taste like banana. So I've had giant water bug, you kind of fry them and then you take the meat out of the thorax and then you put it on a little bit of chocolate and a graham cracker and they call them swamp s'mores and they're delicious.
I
would try that. I know you would.
But so, you know, start, you know, being in the mindset that it's not just another bug. Like, these things are very important and they have their place in the ecosystem, and without them we are all totally and completely screwed. So, you know, show them some love, you know?
Show them some love.
Hug a bug.
Hug a bug?
But not a bark scorpion.
Maybe.
Well, thank you so much, Tony,
yeah,
for coming
for
and talking to us.
Thank you so much.
A very interesting conversation.
That's an understatement.
Yep.